talking about what matters most, I'm thinking that it's a perfect theme to sit in peace, to have peace be our theme today. And so the title of my message is Seeds of Peace, because I think this is a really appropriate time for us to be planting the seeds of peace that we desire to experience in this upcoming year. And certainly we all have a desire to have a little more peace in our lives. What's going to be very different about this talk, because every year, the last talk of the year that I give is themed on peace, because I am mentally preparing myself for the World Peace meditation that we will be doing right here in this sanctuary on Tuesday morning at 5 a.m., joining millions of other people around the world. But typically, when we talk about peace on this last Sunday, we walk away feeling inspired to be a better person and to demonstrate more peace in the way that we live and move about in the world for this upcoming year. Sort of a really high-valued resolution or commitment or intention, as we would like to say here. I want to do that differently this year, because I don't want you to leave feeling like you haven't done something good enough this year. Right? I think that the reality is that we do the best we can, and that we can set intentions to increase the way we bring kindness to the world, or shine our light in the world, or even bring more peace to the world, or withhold that peace. So that's up to us. We're all in choice as to how, what level we participate at it. But I want to speak to peace this morning in an extremely practical way that you will be able to leave here this morning and know precisely what it is I am desiring for you to do in terms of setting your own intentions around peace. And it actually surprised me a little bit when I was writing the message, because what I realized is I don't think we sit quiet enough. I don't think we sit still enough. And I do have a core belief that I share frequently, and that is that every man, woman, and child, if every man, woman, and child around the globe would spend time every day in a little bit of peace that we create by intention of what I call a sitting practice. So in other words, I'm not asking you to develop or improve a meditation practice that you may already have in your life, or that you intend to start, you know, participating in your life. What I'm saying is we just need time to be still. It's a frenetic world. There's a lot to think about. There's a lot to do all the time, every day in our lives. And so what I'm going to be suggesting is that if you do not already have a sitting practice, that you really open yourself to just feel maybe a little nudged, maybe even a little preached at, although I think I did the preaching last Sunday. Now, I don't expect I'm going to get quite that preachy this week, but you never know. So if you already have a, if you don't have a practice, make one. And even if it's just to sit still for 1 minute a day, 1 minute, make it. If you're just starting out, just try and sit still for 1 minute a day and notice how that single gift of 1 minute will change how you move through the day and consequently impact the world and the people in our lives. If you already have a practice, I'm going to suggest that you increase your practice. I've been seeing the term double down. Double down. This is the time to double down, because we need more peace on the planet, and we can do that. And I'm going to tell us today in how our sitting practice actually makes a difference. We'll be looking at that very carefully. But the quotation I found that really turned out to be what I feel is a fabulous definition of peace comes from Ernest Holmes. Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this particular teaching, wrote a great deal about peace. But here's a quotation that I was not real familiar with. It actually sounds like a prayer, a meditation, he might call it, or an affirmation. So listen to these beautiful words. At the center of my being is peace. The peace that is felt in the coolness of the evening, when we have turned away from our labor and the first star shines in the soft light of the sky. there's a freshness, there's a vitality, a power underlying this peace, and it broods over the earth quietly, tenderly, like a mother watching over a sleeping babe. What a gorgeous definition of peace, because as I read those words, I can feel the impact of the words, that they create some sense of feeling inside my physical being. So at the center of our being is peace. Isn't that, a great place to start, that right where we are, at the core of our being, each and every one of us, is this divine essence of peace. And so no matter what's going on in the outside world, we can comfort our mind in just a glimpse of recognition that, wait, that peace is already here. So I can just breathe through whatever this is, and I can anchor myself in the truth of my being, knowing that in the truth of my being, there is peace at the center of even me, of even this situation, whatever it might be. And we feel it like how it's a cool, well, let's say a warm evening, because cool isn't making me happy right now. But in the warmth of the sun is going down, and you've got that coolness and that warmth, and you see that first star in the sky. It sounds rather Christmassy still, doesn't it? You're seeing that star, that light in the sky. And then he takes it and he says something so interesting. He says that in that peace, there's a freshness. There's a vitality. Do you feel that? In that peace, there is a divine energetic. There is something holy about it. And there is a power that underlies all of it. So it broods over the earth. It broods. I love that idea that it's just right there. It's just always everywhere, right where we are. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous, satisfying definition of peace for me, because I like the way I feel it. Now, what happens is when we go to study or think or intend to be more peaceful, we start off sort of on the wrong foot, because we have gotten confused and believed that the definition of peace is the absence of conflict. The absence of conflict is not what defines peace. Might be what you might be looking for, less conflict in your life, and that would be a good thing if you have a lot of conflict, that the opposite of that could be true too. And it is also true that if you are feeling peaceful and you suddenly find yourself in the middle of somebody else's conflict, you will feel that. Right? So conflict can sort of blur or cloud the presence of peace, but the presence of peace is still right where you are. It cannot be diminished. It is still fully right where, at the core of your being. So we live in this busy world, and we have things to accomplish. We live according to a calendar, or we wouldn't know it was the last decade of the year, right? Or the decade, the whatever it is. It's the last Sunday of a decade. We live by clocks. You wouldn't be here probably. Some of you wouldn't have been here on time if you didn't have your clock. I know I need to follow the time. And sometimes that way that the busyness and the calendar and the commitments that we encounter in our day-to-day living can add some frenzy to our life. And still, right in the center of that is the peace of God. So it can look like we're challenged in experiencing peace. And what I want to suggest is that the challenge is in recognizing that it's still there and that we can still call on it. We can still put our attention on it and use it. I mean, let's face it, even the social interactions that we enjoy can bring some conflicting ideas or conversations. There's a lot to chat about lately, isn't there? So what I was thinking as I was writing this material is that I think that when we are aware of conflict, it brings out the bully. What happens is if you think you're seeing, and you are, often we are, witnessing conflict outside of us, it stirs that sort of, you know how we don't like that word bully right now, and we're really aware of it. And so it's come to our consciousness that we don't want to be bullies. And so as we're trying to be better people and to not be bullies and to live more peacefully, we're starting to notice more bullies in the world, and we're naming them and we're calling them out and we're trying to stand on the side of cleaning things up, but we're really, for a while, we're focusing on what's not working. Now, that's okay if it brings you back to what will work. But when you get caught up in only seeing bullies, you are caught up in the bully mentality and you are bullying yourself. And so we want to be careful that we notice all change comes from that first recognition. So we have to walk through that. But we also don't want to just be lingering in that essence that is not the peace of God. When you see it, it can be like a compass that will redirect you to use your intentional thinking to be away from the bullying. And maybe you can even bless the situation that you are observing and that you have already declared is such. And that is the beginning of how we bring change about. I think I said that really well last week, actually. That is how Jesus healed the sick and raised the dead and cast out demons. This would be a good example of casting out a demon, wouldn't it? If you see a bully and then you change your mind that person doesn't have to be a bully and that you can see something else in it. So the whole idea of this way that life sort of swoops us up really is a beautiful way for us to see that necessity for creating peacefulness in our life, and by being very intentional in having a sitting practice or a meditation practice, something that we can call it your applied spiritual practice for 2020. I don't care what you call it. Call it anything. But it's the way we're going to grow in peace. And when we start to grow in peace in our own experience of it, it expands in every way. Expanding peace is a good thing. I found this Zen quote this week. This made me laugh. I've heard it before. You've probably heard it before too, but it's so good. You should sit in meditation for 20 minutes a day, unless you're too busy. Then you should sit for an hour. When I first got here, I said to Cheryl, Cheryl and I were still getting acquainted, and I said, one of the things we're going to do is we're going to have a midday meditation practice. And I don't care, I'm telling you right now, I don't care how busy we look, we are going to stop at 11 a.m. and we are going to spend 15 minutes meditating. I don't care, the busier we are, the more we need it. And it's just, and I'm telling her so she will coach me, so that if she comes to me and says, it's time for meditation, and I say, I'm too busy, she now has permission to say, that's why we're going to do it right now. And so that's how life is. If you're too busy, you probably need it more than the average person. I also think people who say, I tried meditating, it doesn't work for me, you probably need it more than the average person. So this is good advice for us, because the world and life itself is always moving. It's always moving. You know, life is not stagnant. If you sit lakeside, let's say you have a sweet little cabin you're sitting in for a weekend, and there's a pretty lake in front of you, when we notice the lake is smooth, it reflects beautifully. It sometimes you can see the sky and the clouds moving around right in the reflection of the lake, or you can see the trees across the way on the rim of the lake. You can see all of that just reflects, so it sort of doubles the beauty. But if the wind blows, if a little breeze comes along, it creates ripples on the surface of the lake. And now you're looking at it, and it's not as easy to see. It's not a clear reflection. It makes it an interesting experience. But if perchance a gust of wind comes by or a storm moves in, now the water becomes choppy and it can't reflect anything. And that's just how our minds work. That's just how our minds work. When life is calm and peaceful and easy, then it becomes this great smooth surface that can reflect divine things back to us. But when a storm comes, it is normal that we will feel that internal upset, and that will create such a movement, the things moving around in our own mind, that we can't see anymore. We can't see the reflection of the divine, so we have to be very intentional in returning to that place of peace. So we are impacted just the way the lake is impacted by the environment or the atmosphere around it. We are also internally impacted. The atmosphere of our thoughts, as Ernest Holmes used to refer to it, the atmosphere of our thoughts is impacted by all the busyness and the frenetic activity and the seeming conflict in the world. What do? You have to find a way to still your mind so that it can begin to reflect again the things that you would rather be able to tap into, especially if you need them. So, what I'm trying to say is that just the basic movement of life, some of the daily activities we experience, can create that difficulty in trying to see life through the lens that we'd like to see it, but we can always return to our center again and again. Found a real sagey saying from a philosopher from the first century, and he said this, and here's another one we know really well. The secret to happiness is knowing there are some things you can control and some things you cannot control, right? This is the core of what we teach, right? So I can change me, but hard as I try, I cannot change my friends, right? I cannot, I try. You try, you know, look at your person you live with. You know, how many ways, it's so interesting. I have been married almost 50 years, and I still try and change him. It's not like I don't know better, and I catch myself in it because I talk about it every Sunday. You know, it's like, oh, and hear this and that, and I practice, and I apply it in my own life, and I work at it, and still I laugh at myself when I look back at some way I have tried to change him yet again. Will you ever eat vegetables, honey? And still, I have a little, and I think I'm so good. It's like, I'll tell you, oh, yeah, I gave that up years ago. And then last week, aren't we so interesting? So some things you can control and some things you can't control. And the spiritual, a sign of spiritual maturity is when you realize that you can only change you. And I think that's what we mean at the end of that the benediction, the little shout out prayer we do at the end of the service is, I accept it just the way that it is and just the way that it is not. It is not ever going to be a man who eats vegetables. Do you see the sanity in recognizing that? And I'll probably never let that die, even though I know it and it makes sense. So what I'm saying is, in a storm, I don't go out and try and redirect the wind. I cannot control the storm. I don't even pray for the storm to go away. I'm really careful how I pray about nature, because nature is a part of some perfect whole that sometimes we are unable to recognize the wisdom in the whole. But what I do know is, if I find myself in a storm, I do something about it. You know, I needed to go to the grocery store on Friday, and did it rain all day Friday like we were living somewhere else other than here? It was that steady kind of heavy at times. You know, it just kept coming down and coming down and coming, and I had to go to the grocery store. And so I get to the market, and I thought, well, maybe it'll lighten up before I leave. And of course, you know, old Murphy, it was raining harder than ever by the time I left the market. This would not happen to Reverend Cheryl. May I just say, this would not happen to Reverend Cheryl. And she would, nor would she try and make her husband eat vegetables. You want to try and help my husband eat vegetables? I'm just thinking there might be something there. Anyhow, you want to know truth, you talk to her. And so I'm in the grocery store. It's time to go put the groceries in the car. It's pouring. It's raining harder than it was, but I brought my umbrella. See, I thought ahead. If you're in a storm, do something about it. Wear proper shoes, which I never do, but wear proper shoes and take an umbrella if you might be at risk in getting wet. So there I was at the trunk of my car, holding my umbrella with one hand, trying to put my stuff in the car and trying to keep not only myself dry, but then I noticed that three of my book bags were sitting there in the rain, and now I don't want my stuff to get rained on, so I'm covering my stuff with the grocery bags, but I got it all in the car. And I was thinking later that, see, that's a really great example that if you have to go out, first of all, this is why it wouldn't happen to Reverend Cheryl. She probably just would have waited till the rain quit, you know, go on a different day or something. I don't know. Got anything to say back there? I'd love to know what you're thinking. You have to tell me later. Well, yo, she is laughing so hard, her body is going like this, up and down, all the way down, up and down. So I think preparation or good choices, smart choices. And what the point is that we are always sitting in front of many, 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 many choices. Our problem is we think it's black or white. If I don't go to this store now, I'm going to have to do it after work. And, oh, I'm going to be so tired after work. So I'd rather just get it out of the way now, right? Okay, so there's a choice. There's a choice. But I used my umbrella, and then later what I realized was the umbrella became for me like a symbol of peace. Okay, so I'm going to choose to get my groceries now, and the symbol of peace I'm going to use to remind me to not blame it on Murphy, to not be in a bad mood because I got to do it, is that I got this umbrella. So think about it. What is your umbrella in life? What is a symbol in your own life for how you can maintain your sanity when you are out in the world doing things that you're sort of at risk to have your mood diminished from away from that gorgeous divine high that all that prayer work in the morning gets us revved up for? So it's always valuable for us to be examining our own shenanigans. I'm just going to say shenanigans. You know, to look at the way that everything holds another piece of the puzzle or another little arrow in the direction, that there's always divine guidance out there that is about the way we take in the information around us and process it and then build upon that to make future decisions. And that's, again, spiritual growth. So we are talking today about planting seeds of peace, and we do that in the anticipation of having a greater experience, right? Because you're never done. There's always something more that we could, the ways we can enhance it or shift our consciousness to accept even more possibility of experiencing good in our lives. I think that more and more people, I'm going to take that back. I'm not going to say I think. There is evidence that more and more people on this planet are practicing peace. You know, and I know there are people some people will be hearing this and saying, I don't know what world you're looking at, but that ain't true in the way I see life. But what I want to say is there's actual evidence. You could Google it, right? There's actual evidence. I have an app on my phone called the Insight Timer. Thank you, Kelly, very much. It was the first app I ever put on my first smartphone. I'd never be without it. And the app tells me right now, it's a meditation app. In this moment, there are 6,100 people meditating, just the people that have this app. And then have told the app, I'm sitting to meditate right now. 6,100 people. Already today, 427,000 people have sat down to meditate. There are 11.4 million people that are using this app. And I love it because it has a timer. I can sit down, I can press it, and after 15 minutes, it has a gorgeous gong, and you get to select how you want your gong to sound. It's fabulous. But it also tells me how many people are meditating at the same time that I'm sitting down to meditate. See, that's what I love about the World Peace Meditation. It's that there are millions of people at exactly that moment with the very same intention coming together to create an environment that envisions and affirms peace on the planet. So 6,100 people, and there's this line in the Course in Miracles that says this: every time you sit for 1 minute in meditation, every time you sit still for 1 minute, 1,000 lives are touched. 1,000 lives are touched. So 1,000 times 6,100, who can do the math on that? 61. Come on, there's got to be somebody that knows it. How many? 600,000. Thank you. Whew, that was hard. Just 1 minute. So I like, oh wait, did we just correct ourselves? It's 6 million? Oh, I love that. I'm not the only slow math person here. We all got it kind of. That was great. That was really kind of fun. 6 million. So, you know, that's no small thing to just, I know it's just a what if, but imagine that every time you sit for 1 minute, what great work we're really doing in a bigger way. We are living in a time of great change, and when we go through change, what we don't like about change, the reason change can feel so scary is that it carries us to the edge of everything we know. You're right at the edge, and you have no choice, but you're going to have to take that next step any minute now, and you're not going to know a thing about it because there's no manual that prepares you for it, because everything you know is back here. You're about to step into something new, and that is true for the cultural change we see going on globally. It feels scary because we don't know what it looks like, but it's coming and it's emerging through us, and we are really making the decisions individually as well as collectively. But it always starts with a single mind, my mind. But you have to say my mind, too. It's my mind, but it's your mind, too. It's your mind. It starts with yourself. And so as we stand at that edge and it's kind of scary, well, it's okay that we don't like it. But I think that we can come to recognize that the way we are spiritually fed. You have chosen to be here today or not to be here today, right? We choose what we read. We choose what we put on the television set. We choose what we do on Facebook or what we read on Facebook. You know, we're always in choice. And so I think this is really, really relevant. Let us be extremely intentional in making choices that will renew our own commitment and experience of peace. Because then you won't care who eats vegetables and who doesn't eat vegetables. I mean, you know how that is. You know how uncomfortable it is when you turn on your computer and you get a message that says, Microsoft now has a new version of Windows. You know, I don't want another new version of Windows. But if I don't figure out how to do it, it's going to interfere with how comfortable I am in sitting and doing what I need to do every day on my computer. Just hate it when they move those icons around in Word. Why do they do that? Right? And you could be that you, how many of you had that? What was it? X, Microsoft X? What did we call that? And then all of a sudden they go, oh yeah, we're not servicing that one anymore. You're on your own. It's like, so we're living in a world of change, and we can complain that we have all those wonderful cassettes at home and it's getting harder and harder to find a cassette player, or we can get with the times. I made a commitment, I bet for the last 5 years, there's somebody in this room that could validate this, this was the year I'm going to get savvy in how to do music on my phone. And I said that out loud to somebody here this past week. It's like, yeah, I'm going to do that MP3 thing. And they looked at me and went, oh, don't bother. It's on its way out. It's over. You have to start. Julie's shaking her head. Yes, that's true. And so, you know, we're living in a changing world because it's alive. And life is about movement, and life is about always new things and looking at life. So if you are living on the edge and you're uncomfortable with it, then you get to decide if you want to hunker down and get ready for the storm, or do you want to put on your rain boots? Do you want to grab your umbrella? Because all you really need to do, all any of us really needs to do, is to stand in that place of clear knowing. Get out of the muck for a minute and stand or sit in that perfect peace that we create in a meditation practice, in a sitting practice, just for a few minutes. Get out of the storm and remember, it'll pass. You know, I love that it says so many times biblically, and it came to pass. So let us get that life is here, and let us figure out what our symbol is. What is your umbrella? That'd be a great way to move through the year. So I know sometimes getting to peace looks or feels messy. If you've ever remodeled, oh, holy cow, you have this vision of something wonderful you want, but it puts you in a few months of total chaos, right? So setting intention, as we're talking about today, can for a while make your life feel a little messier. But what we are doing is knowing that these seeds of possibility are always in the middle of chaos, right? Sometimes things fall apart because they can't work that way anymore, and there's a better way that we can embody. Holmes says, you have to look the discordant fact in the face. Now, I say that a lot, and I use it when I'm teaching prayer. It's like, first you got to name the problem so you can write out or be clear about what the purpose is. What is the purpose of the prayer you're wanting to learn, to the affirmative prayer you're trying to create? Right? So Holmes says, you start by looking at the discordance. You have to look at it. But I found this quote that augments that so beautifully. It says, Holmes, we must look at the thing, whatever the thing is, we must look at it until it no longer has power over us.
Whoa.
We must look at it. Go ahead and quake in your knees for a minute, but look at it until you come to your senses or you clear the surface of your own mind to recognize that there is something else trying to happen here. There's a better way. There's a solution to the problem, whatever it is. You know, we had a light go out in the hallway. We have a hall light mounted on the wall. The light went out. Hugh monkeyed around with it for a day or two, and then he tells me, like, I don't think it's a light bulb. It's been flickering, and I can't get it to stay on. Every now and then it'll flicker, and I went, oh, boy. One more thing we have to, you know, not like the weeds aren't just all going, whee, right now in the front yard. They're drunk. They're all drunk on the rain. You know it. They're just... they're doing that thing that makes them multiply. It's like, ah. So I think, wow, it's a problem. And for 1 week, I'm not kidding you, I'm pretty sure it was like a 7-day week. We have that hallway that's dark, and even when in the daylight, it's just that dark little place. So I had no idea. For 1 week, every time I walked around the corner to go to my office, I flipped on the light switch, and there was no light. And I would curse the darkness, right? right? How do you curse the darkness? It's easy. You can tisk. You can roll your eyes. You can say words that you don't really want to be saying. But for a full week, I cursed the darkness. And then at one point, and I kept thinking, I need to do something about that. And so I've got this, already I've got this big agenda that it's going to be, I'm going to have to find the right handyman. Who knows? Maybe it's an electrician. It's going to cost money. And one day, in the last couple days, I was meditating. I was meditating. I wasn't trying to figure out how to solve the problem. This is why you want to meditate. I was sitting in my chair doing my sitting practice, and you know, when you sit, you know, it's not like your brain goes dead and you don't have any thoughts. It's like you notice, you pay more attention, you observe what's going on in there. And I realized I have made this into a problem. What if there's another way of looking at this, and it doesn't have to be a problem? I mean, here's what I know. The full potential for me to have light in the dark hallway is already there. Yeah. It's just disconnected somehow. I don't know how. And then it's got one of those clever little glass, pretty decorative glass things over it, so you can't just get the light bulb out. You got to take the whole thing apart. And so here's me. So I'm standing on a little stool, not happy about it. And I'm trying to, but the screws, so the glass thing is this way, and so the screws are back here, so you know what that means? Righty tighty, lefty loosey, it's all backwards. And I have just enough dyslexia that I could not figure it out. I could not figure it out. I had tried to figure it out when I still believed it was a problem. But I'm sitting in my meditation chair, and all of a sudden, I think, it's not a problem. How funny. And you kind of laugh at yourself when you realize you've made such a big deal out of nothing. And I had this vision of me standing in the bathroom, the way that the screws would be righty-tighty, lefty-loosey if they were reversed. Right? I couldn't figure out how to do it. By the way, I always put my children's shoes on the wrong feet when they were little. It was very sad. And I got up after my meditation, and I went and I stood in the bathroom in the way I got the vision, and I went, okay, so the screws are like this. So now righty-tighty, righty would be the backyard, loosey would be the front yard. I've got it. All I have to do is turn around and work the screws to go to the front yard, and voila, the light thing came off, and it was just a dead light bulb. But I had made it into a pretty big and expensive problem that did not have to exist. Now, think about this. How many times do you think we really have called the electrician and paid a big expensive bill when maybe we didn't have to? We just had to get righty-tighty, lefty-loosey in our brain somehow. And how do you get that? By getting out of the busyness, getting out of the craziness. Could we apply this to our health issues? Oh, yes, we could. Could we apply this to our financial issues? There would be no issues if we would sit quietly and let the information come to us. There's this great passage in this book, the Science of Mind textbook, well read. On page 489, you wanna, if you like this book, you wanna reread this one later. Page 489 in the Science of Mind textbook, I think of this because there's this place where Holmes says, sometimes you just gotta let, L-E-T, it's a big word, he says. And I knew that, so I looked it up. I researched it till I found it because I thought, this is what I'm trying to say this morning. Here's what it says. It starts in a subheading, that is how to demonstrate liberty. So it's about freedom, how to gain everything we do here is about having more freedom in your life, really. Everything boils down to that. But I'm changing it to be about peace. And my intent right now, as we wrap up this message, is that you can take this home, and it will be on page 489. It is your how to use peace to solve every problem in your life. 489, you want to remember that. What page? I know, right? And so I've changed it from how to demonstrate liberty to how to use peace to solve a problem. You should do that too. Just cross it right out. How to use peace to solve a problem. It's a better topic. Listen to this. To demonstrate peace, drop all negative thoughts. Mic drop, right? Just drop it. Drop all negative thoughts out of your mind. Do not dwell upon adversity, but think plenty. think plenty. Think plenty into everything. Because there's so much power in your word, he says. So think plenty. There's plenty of information. There's plenty of wisdom. All the wisdom I need to change that light bulb. How many ministers does it take to change? There's plenty. Plenty of ways to do anything. There's plenty of choice in our state of mind. Can you imagine that? You have choice in your state of mind and you have plenty of it. So he says, meditate on the things that you are doing as if they were already done. Great. So we give Neville credit for that. Holmes said it a lot. Try to sense the infinite life around and within you and meditate on this life until your whole being flows into it and becomes one with it. Oh, right back to Butterworth discussion after service today. The flow of life. Prove your principle by allowing this life to flow through the thing that you are working on. Isn't that apropos? So I'm looking at the light, the way the light works. Meditate on it, on this principle of life. Think of it like electricity, to flow through that thing that you are working on, and do not will or compel it to work. Wow, it's not even us. It's about getting out of the way. Can you get out of the way when it comes to your health? Can you get out of the way when it comes to your money? Can you get out of the way when it comes to your relationships? I don't know. But listen to the, reread this when you go home or in the free book out in the lobby I keep out there. Here's what he says. You don't compel it because things happen by an immutable law and you don't need to energize it. It is the power. It is all the energy. It is the source, in fact. So now here's where it gets really good. All you need to do is to realize this fact and then let it be done unto you. Let it be done unto you and let it be done unto that for which you are working. So I'm going to let it be done unto me and I'm going to let it be done unto the light on the wall over there. L-E-T is a big word, and it is an important word. Allow reality to manifest in everything that you do. Amen. Whoa! I love revisiting old stuff and feeling it inside of me, feeling the power of it, the truth, the wisdom in it. So it appears, my friends, it appears that we are living in a broken world. It appears that peace is absent. It may even appear that we have lost our way in a dark night. But we have not. Everything we need to move through the dark night or the storm or the change, everything we need is already given. And the only thing we have to do is align ourselves to sit still, 1 minute a day, sit still, and allow it to be revealed through us. Martin Luther King Jr. said, peace is not a distant goal. It's not a goal that we seek, but it is a means by which we arrive at the goal. So use peace. Use your meditation practice to enhance your understanding of everything that has been spoken this morning. Take a class. We're having a meditation class. Tracy Herrick will be teaching meditation on, it's in your bulletin. Take a class. If last year you took a class, take two classes this year. Double down, right? Look at ways in which you can delve beneath the surface of the lake, get below the choppy water, because you know those fish are just swimming like there's nothing wrong. Get below the storm, dive deep into truth, because truth is there. The peace of God abides within you always. Let's just be sure we notice. So I'm done with that, and I'd like to anchor all of that in the words of prayer. So if you would are a practitioner or a minister or ministerial intern, if you would just stand right now and surround this room, we're going to really do some prayer around it, see what we can make happen here. Let's take a nice deep cleansing breath. For a moment, we just know that all is well in the world, because even now 6,000 people are joining us in acknowledging the presence of God. So just notice the stirring of love at the core of your being. And allow the music to bring peace, that inner peace, to our surroundings. As we still the waters of our own minds and approach that which is most holy, I feel the love of God within me, and I know it is the activity of life. I know it is that which abides forever, and that something wonderful happens as we speak these powerful words of prayer. We are pulled into that place where we recognize that right where we are, God is. Peace is. And so I feel the fullness, that satisfied contentment of knowing that indeed all is well. That there is a power and a presence in the universe, and it is a power that is greater than we are. And as we speak these words of prayer, we are unified with it, and we are using it. And so we simply affirm together this day the truth of the presence of peace, that every individual is given freedom to express it in a way that works simply for their own self. But that as we bring that idea of a minute of peace into a collective whole, we create something magnificent. So we stand in this freedom of knowing that we are not obligated, but that it is a desire of our soul that we may experience, that at any given time, in any appearance of conflict of any sort, we can change our mind, we can take a breath, we can breathe and know right where we are, peace is. We begin to still the waters. And where it feels difficult to do that, we bring with us that image of the umbrella that protects us from the elements. For it is our very essence of spiritual study and application that has anchored us and made us ready for opening and becoming a vessel to receive the goodness of God in our lives, to receive the light of God and the love of God, so that something within us, that which is divine, is sparkened, and it flames largely into this great golden glow of truth that permeates our being. And so with that beautiful image of peace as a mother brooding over a child, the way in which peace mothers this planet, we just allow ourselves to see that image in a way that makes sense to us. And to know that we do our work individually, that we do not have to wait on a collective number of souls to get together to make something change or happen, that life is changing and we are equipped to deal with the change. And so I speak this blessing upon all of the people sitting in chairs here, or people at the sound of my voice listening to this later, knowing that these are powerful truths. These are desires of the soul to be expressed in our livingness. And so we We open ourselves and we just allow that grace of God to pour into our lives, into our beings, into every nook and cranny of who and what we are. Because the truth is, and we know this intimately, that we live and we move and we have our being in peace, in God, in this divine life. And so there is healing. There is restoration of the physical body. There is glorious way in which our relationships are enhanced every time we sit for a minute in a day, recognizing these greater realities. So I say thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. How amazingly wonderful it is to just accept, to feel that vital, vibrant essence of the Spirit washing over us and ignited from within us, creating this cocktail of lusciousness in life. Hallelujah. Hallelujah, hallelujah. I praise this glorious year we are saying goodbye to, and I joyously anticipate that which we are about to step into in tremendous thanksgiving, a heart filled and overflowing with love and gratitude. I simply release the words of this prayer and allow them to be, and together we say, and so it is.